I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. K2RIW and K2KEY Mel. We're nothing at this time called the Technical Net. Amateurs come together, a gathering of the clan. We help each other learn how all this stuff works. Your transmitters, your receivers, your antennas, your feed lines, propagation modes, and whatever. There's a lot to learn about wireless technology. Ham radio is probably one of the most educational hobbies there is. And by way of talking to each other, ham radio operators are rather good communicators. They teach each other the art and science of wireless and radio equipment. A person signs into the Technical Net because he has a question or a comment by giving us his call letters, his name, and the word yes or no. A typical sign-in would sound like this. K2KEY, Mel, and yes. So, do we have any check-ins? Please give me your call letters and name and that yes or no at this time. K2RIW.
Ming Dick, N2EO, no questions.
WHYY, Joe, yes.
So far we got Rich with a no and Joe with a yes. Anyone else?
KC2, UPP, Mike, no.
WS2N, Paul, no questions there.
Mike and no, Mike and Paul with a no. Anyone else? I suspect we're going to have eventually quite a few questions. We've now been 2 days into the fairly pure use of digital television instead of analog television. Guarantee there'll be a lot of questions on that subject. I've made a few discoveries in the last 48 hours. Anyone else to sign into the Technical Net? Give me your call letters, name, and a yes or no. K2RIW.
KB1NNH, Jerry, no.
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
Okay, Jerry and Steve with a no. One last call. Anyone else, particularly with a yes? Which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. Please give me your call letters and name at this time. Okay, it looks like, Joe, it's you and me. And we can take our own free time. And I, for one, was watching on Friday at noontime at 12:30. I guess that's when Channel 7, ABC, went off analog. I think Channel 11 also went off analog. 2 and 4 analog stayed there continuously, and I think they're still there, giving people instruction as to how to set up the new converters. It was interesting to me to watch ABC television. At 12:30, they gave you a countdown. You saw a man in the control room press a button that supposedly switches things over. He presses the button and nothing happens for the next 5 seconds. So I think something else was really going on behind the scenes. That wasn't the real button. Some of the Spanish channels also, in Spanish, were counting down and you watched them go off the air. There's a fair amount of confusion about a lot of people as to what the channel numbers mean. There's an RF number and there's an identification number. And sometimes they're weirdly different. Thank goodness there are some websites that slightly straighten it all out. So, I wonder what's new with you, Joe. W-E-2-R-Y-Y. K-2-R-I-W.
Did anybody else have a question? Because I'm sort of on the phone at the same time. Was there anyone that jumped in here with a question?
You were the only one, but I'll give another call right now. Anyone else with a question or a comment? We're kind of light tonight on questioners. Anyone with a question or a comment? Please give us your call letters and your name and that yes right now. K-2-R-I-W listening.
KB2MAR with a comment.
KB2 Sierra Quebec Paul with a question.
Okay, MAI and Sierra Quebec. Mr. Sierra Quebec, what is your name, sir?
The name is Paul. The call is Kilo Baker 2 Sierra Quebec. I'm in New York City, Manhattan, by the George Washington Bridge.
Very good, Paul. We'll get back to you in a minute. KB2MAI, start off with your name, sir. And then proceed with your question. My name is Dick.
Excuse me, Dick. By the way, the call is Kilo Bravo 2 Mike Alpha Romeo. Same here as Steve. And basically, a question regarding the DTV converter box. Funny thing is, when they converted over, I already had the channels programmed into the system. Now, the funny thing is, when you rescanned again to see if they added new channels after the conversion, they actually have two of the same channel. For example, I have 2-1 for channel 2, and there's another 2-1, and it's blank. So that happens to other channels also. Maybe I should just cancel the previous 2-1 channel. Back to you. Maybe 2MAR.
Very fine, Gabe. What you're possibly confirming is something that I was going to check on and never did check on, and that is, when you do a rescan, I suspected that some brand names of digital converter box will wipe out the old channels and just do a scan for what is live at that time. Another kind of scenario by which the box could work is every time you do a rescan, it adds channels but doesn't erase any of the old ones. So which boxes do which is a big question for me. My particular box happens to be a Radio Shack, and it has a rescan function, which I was afraid to reuse because I didn't want to lose some of the channels that I had, because some of my channels are intermittent. They come in intermittently and disappear because I'm right at the threshold of a strong enough or a clean enough signal for the thing to work. So I was using the edit mode, which allows you to add channels. Now, certain channels, like take, for instance, CBS, CBS started off as channel 56, then switched over to channel 33. CBS, which you and I know as channel 2 on over-the-air broadcast, started off as RF channel 56 up until the switchover, then switched over to RF channel 33. And as such, the 56 reading that you might have in your memory is really obsolete and no longer effective unless somebody else took up 56. There were some changeovers between brand A and brand B of networks, trading channels, but in the case of CBS, that wasn't one of them. So that's part of the explanation, and I think what I intend to do, and probably you intend to do the same thing, is we'll do a little bit of checking on the channel that looks like it went dead, just to make sure that it really is dead, and there's other things going to be happening this week as I see it. When Eric signs in, KE2EJ, who works in broadcast, he may be able to straighten more of this out for us. Right now, as it is, channel 7, ABC at 156 megacycles, 154, 156, I keep forgetting whichever it is, was analog, and at 12:30 p.m. on Friday, on June 12th, that repeater,
timeout.
At 12:30 p.m., they ceased transmitting analog on 174 megacycles and started transmitting digital on 174 megacycles. And where they used to be transmitting digital television on channel 45, they ceased transmitting on 45. Now, did somebody else take over 45? I know somebody took over 44. Somebody took over 42. I don't know if anybody took over 45 at this time. So, in the case of ABC, what we know over the year in analog days is channel 7. Channel 7 is now digital. Something similar happened with 11 and 13. So, 7, 11, and 13 are back to their old frequency, but using the new digital mode. Almost every other channel that I know of didn't do that, with the exception, almost every other one. Channel 21, for instance, was transmitting digital on 22. 22 RF is now blank, and channel 21 used to be analog, it's now digital. So there's going to be a lot of switching around. At this time, in my area, RF channel 8, RF channel 9 are not being used. They seem to be blank. And I guess eventually also 10 and 12 will be used. That's my guess as to what's happening. Over to you, Gabe. KB2, Mike Alpha Romeo, K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Yeah, another question. Those channels that are... will they be adding new programming to those channels? Because I'm surprised the converter box allows the don't think the converter box is smart enough to actually stop by now that have information on that. So they're just on the right of the carrier, it's right screen. There's a whole lot, there's a lot of those channels. I have a total of 28 channels that the converter box has picked up. I live in Yonkers, New York.
Gabe, are you using a handy talkie and are you moving around? Your signal is extremely weak. We lost more than half of what you said that time because you went into a RF fade. So maybe you can find a more desirable location if you're using a handy talkie, or if you're using a rooftop antenna that has a rotator, maybe you can find a better direction. You're extremely weak. So before we proceed, let me pass it back to you for comments on that, Gabe. KB2MAR, K2RIW.
Okay, Richard, how's that? How's this position?
Fantastic improvement. What did you do? Was that a handy talkie?
Yeah, it's a handy talkie. What I was doing is I was sitting down at the on top of the deck, and I stood up, and basically just turning around facing towards Long Island. That's what happened.
Okay. I'll tell you what we did hear before you faded out last time, and that is that... No, I'm not quite sure what we heard. Why don't you repeat your whole message now that you're in a better location? You better not move. Over to you, Gabe.
Basically, I'd like to know the channels that are blank. I have a whole bunch of them, like 8-1, 8-2, 8-3, and so on. Will there be programming on those channels in the near future? I'm surprised the cable box actually stopped on those channels and there's no programming on them yet. But I think that the box is not going to know the difference between... blank stations and stations that are programming on them. And also, I also said that my beam, I have a channel master, second to the top of the line channel master beam antenna, pointed in the general direction of New York City, but not quite spot on, maybe, like, let's say, towards the World Trade Center, for example. It's a little bit to, it's kind of towards more east of the World Trade Center. Should I be pointing it spot on to the World Trade Center area? KB2MAR back to net.
There's a yes and a no to that, Gabe. In my opinion, a guy like you who is reasonably radio savvy and reasonably well off should be using a rotator on the antenna. I think the majority of us are going to eventually want a rotator. At first, that sounds crazy. In the analog days, you and I wanted a signal of 45 decibels of signal-to-noise ratio to be snow-free. And the main lobe of the antenna... I'm going to pick a number, maybe it's 30 degrees wide. Therefore, if you were aiming the antenna and you were plus or minus 10 degrees wrong with the aiming of an antenna that's 30 degrees wide, you'd lose a couple of decibels of signal strength, and a couple of decibels out of 45, if you had the ability to be snow-free, you would be very hard-pressed without laboratory instrumentation to measure the difference. That's analog television. Digital television is very different. In the case of a digital television, if we just first talk about signal strength, as the signal gets weaker and weaker, you'll see absolutely no change, no snow appears on the screen. When you hit the critical number where your particular converter says, ouch, and it starts skipping signals, starts skipping its ability to properly synchronize the packets of information, very critical synchronization must take place in the digital system. If it loses that synchronization, the picture starts getting blocky, the sound starts dropping out, and pretty soon you've got nothing. It locks up continuously, and it'll give you a sign on the screen saying weak signal or no programming. The difference between a signal that is acceptable and a signal that is not acceptable is a fraction of one decibel. Let me contrast that with analog. In the case of analog, snow-free is 45 or 47 dB of carrier-to-noise ratio. Call it signal-to-noise ratio, if you like. And if you make the signal weaker and weaker, you can go from 47 all the way down to 30. The picture gets snowy. Maybe it jumps around a little bit, but for a person who's enthusiastic watching a program you really care about, you would watch a signal at 30 dB of signal-to-noise ratio in analog. That's a 17 dB difference between snow-free and the thresholds of what you start getting annoyed with, 17 dB of difference. Whereas with digital television, you go from a full pick
repeater. Time out.
With digital television, you go from a picture that's near perfect to a picture that is not there at all in approximately 1 decibel. It's got an extremely sharp threshold. That's case number one, only talking about signal strength. Case number two with digital, in the case of analog, if you've got multipath, in other words, if your signal is coming directly from the Empire State Building to your house in Yonkers on Florence Street, and it gets there both directly and a little bit of it bouncing off a building somewhere, and therefore when you watch an analog picture, you see the real picture and you see a little bit of a ghost to the right. That's the bounce signal that arrives a little bit late. Late means it's a little bit displaced to the right, and the way the horizontal scan lines work. In the case of analog television, a tremendous amount of ghosting can be almost acceptable, depending on how critical a watcher you are. In the case of digital television, a certain amount of ghosting of a certain amount of time delay gives what's called intersymbol distortion on these digital signals being transmitted, and depending on what generation your particular converter is, be it generation 3, 5, 1, they seem to come in odd numbers, the higher number, higher generation, later produced, higher technology converter boxes can tolerate a little more amplitude of multipath signal, a little bit more time delay, and it eventually figures it all out and straightens it out. The bottom line of all this is that if you have a rotator on your television over-the-air receiving antenna, minor amounts of motion of the antenna, skewing it horizontally, I mean, rotating it in azimuth a few degrees to the left and to the right, is only going to make a small difference in amplitude, but it can make a significant difference in the way the multipath works. And therefore, with a rotator, some of the signals that are giving you trouble will cease to give you trouble. In the worst case, you may have to aim your rotator, let's say, due south for you to get to the Empire State Building when you're watching Channel 2. And when you're watching Channel 4, maybe you'll earn it a couple of degrees off to the south, toward the west, in order to get good reception. Things like that will take place. There is ample evidence right now that minor amounts of rotation of the antenna in some circumstances can make a huge improvement in the rate at which it gets
repeater. Time out.
Can make huge improvements at the rate at which it gets the signal. I wonder if all of that makes a little bit more sense now, Gabe. KB2 MAR, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KB2 MAR. I would best get a beam, I'm sorry, a rotator for the beam, because there are times when I see the pictures when the signal doesn't appear not to be as good. The pictures look compressed, kind of, on the y-axis, vertical axis, compressed. However, when the signal is strong, obviously it looks very nice. I also noticed some delay, like if you're watching a baseball game, when the pitcher pitches the ball, you see the ball hit the mitt, but you hear the thunk later on. So, I mean, that's to be expected, because it's not the digital circuitry can't process the signal fast enough to give you the spot-on accuracy with the ball and the sound. So that's how that works. I understand that. But let's see here. I receive a total of 28 channels. I don't know how much you receive, but with the antenna pointed in only one direction without using a rotator, I receive 28 channels, including the blank ones. How much do you receive?
What? We first have to come up with a definition of channels here, Ricky. If, for instance, you were watching channel 7, there's a 7-1, 7-2, 7-4, 7-5, 13-1, 13-2, 13-3. In the case of 13-1, 2, and 3, would you call that three channels, or would you call all of those 13 and call them one channel? So, first define what channels are before we know what 28 channels means. Over to you, Gabe.
KB2, Jane Dixon.
I'm assuming that I'm including the 2-1, 2-2, like 4-1, 4-2, 4-4. But I think, so obviously you're telling me that for example, 4-1, 4-2, and 4-4 would count as one channel from the company. Is that right?
Yeah, JXN recognized. JXN will get to you in a minute. Because when you look at your signal strength indicator, while you're watching 4-1, 4-2, 4-4, 4-5, so to speak, you will see that the signal strength indicator does not move for that particular, when you're on 4 at all. So they're all the same channel, just that there's individual packets of information being transmitted over that RF frequency. And by the way, channel 4 is not really transmitted on channel 4 anymore. 4, which is NBC, now is 28. These numbers are going to drive people crazy. Everybody calls it channel 4. That way you can identify with the programming you used to know about over-the-air channel 4. But it's really being transmitted on RF UHF channel 28, for instance. But on that 28, 6 megs wide UHF channel, 4 or so packets of information, individual programming material, is being sent simultaneously. So I would call that one channel. And there are some channels, I forget which channel it was now, something like 27, I think it is. 27 goes all the way up to -12, I've noticed. And some of those are audio-only channels, a little bit like what you get with cable television, so to speak. So I think we have to count them as the prefix number before the dash is what really counts. In that case, what's your guess as to how many channels you're getting? And by the way, this one of the strongest channels I used to get in the old days is channel 2, CBS, 54 to 60 megacycles in the old days. Channel 2 now, CBS, is I think it's 50... Well, I gotta find it on my silly list here. All of a sudden, oh, there it is. It's now on 33. UHF channel 33, RF channel 33, is what used to be called CBS over-the-air channel 2. And so, 2 used to be very strong to me. Channel 33 RF-wise, which is now called channel 2, is very weak to me. And I live on 300 feet above sea level land. I've got a fringe area antenna mounted on the chimney of the house. Lucky for me, I've got a radio tower. I'm going to mount a second antenna at a higher altitude. So a number of people...
Repeater, time out.
In my opinion, a number of people who used to get certain channels that they fell in love with, I used to always watch the 60 Minutes program before the TechNet begins, for instance. And tonight I wasn't able to do that because I get a very flaky signal right at the threshold where it pops in and pops out on what is now called Channel 2, which is really RF Channel 33. So, to answer your question, I think we should count channels as to the prefix before the dash. Other than that, some of these channels are going to be adding extra dash numbers, and it really is the exact same RF frequency. The R is the exact same signal strength coming out of the broadcast transmitter. And to answer your other question, are some of those blank channels going to be filled? And I think the answer is yes. When Eric comes in...
I'm here.
When Eric comes in... is that Eric? Go ahead. Tell us about some of those blanks, Eric. KE2EJ, if that's you. K2LAW.
KB2JXM.
Yeah, well, I just heard the radio watch. You're going to have to fill me in with the question. K2LAW, KE2EJ.
Okay, Mr. JXM, start off with your name. If you want to be added to the list because you got a question, fine. If you've got something to contribute on this particular subject, go right ahead. Start off with your name first, sir. KB2JXN, K2RIW.
No, not really. I just wanted to get in line there. It's, I guess I'll just catch you later.
What is your name, sir?
Oh, sorry. Gary, G-A-R-Y.
Very fine, Gary. You sound like you're mobile. I'm hearing you both on the input and the output. Out of curiosity, are you going to be in the area for more than a few minutes, or do you think you're getting out of the area, or are you going to be parking your car and not getting to another rig? Over to you, Gary.
I'll be here for about 5 more minutes.
Why don't you just tell us what your question is, so before we lose you, we at least know what the subject matter is, we can start breathing heavy. You got it, Gary.
It's just a thing of coax length. I'm fixing an antenna One of the capacitors blew inside, and I was trying different coax lines, found that different SWRs, so I figured, well, heck with all that, I'm just going to use one length and use that for all three bands so I can trim down. I have to try and fix this thing. Capacitor exploded, I got to try different values. I don't know what the value was, and I have to keep trying to get the lowest SWR in all three bands so I can put this thing back together again. So I'm just going to use one coax length.
Okay, you left out a lot of information. I'm guessing it's some kind of a multi-band HF antenna that does have some kind of a loading network that includes a capacitor. And at the 100 watt level or whatever watt level you ran, that capacitor went into a failure mode. In the process of replacing the capacitor, you apparently tried different cable lengths, and you thought you saw different standing wave ratios when you changed the length of the cable. And I've got a lot of issues with that one, Gary, if that's what you're saying. I know a lot of people have seen that, and they think it's real. Believe it or not, most of the time, when you see that, something else is going on. That is not real. Standing wave ratio of 2-to-1, for instance, means that 1/10 of the power that you send to the antenna is being reflected to you. The magnitude of the reflected power from the antenna doesn't give a darn whether you're using a cable that is a foot long or 100 feet long. Changing the cable length, if you've got a good VISWR meter, in reality should not change the indicated VISWR. When it does, sometimes it indicates that you've got an error in the VISWR measuring instrumentation. Sometimes it means that the signal is being radiated by the cable itself. And now as you change the length of the cable, you're changing the effect of the, you're changing the equivalent length, the radial length, the wavelength length of the radiating system. And yes, that will change the VISWR. Over to you, Gary, for any further words on that one. KB2JXN, K2RIW.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we can talk about that for half an hour, because, yeah, there's more information that I can put into this, so I better either hit you at another time about this, because in about 3 minutes I'm going to get out of range. I better let you get back to what you were talking about with the guys there.
Well, this TechNet goes on for very close to midnight most of the time. Will you be getting near a place where you can operate your radio later on tonight and we can bring it up again? That's question number one. Or number two, because you didn't really get handled all the way today, no matter when you sign in next week, you'll be number one on the runway because you signed in the previous week. Wanted to see the process there, Gary. Over to you, Gary.
Well, that's cool. I know you did that. That's good. Okay, I can be home in about, maybe 10, 15 minutes, and I can get onto the base because I have a tower.
Okay, you are beginning to fade out now, but thank goodness I heard you say on the input that you're getting to the base in 10 minutes, and we'll bring it up at this time. Alrighty, we'll come back to you then. Now, Gabe's question, KB2MAR, for Eric, KE2EJ, is that he's recognizing the fact that what we used to call analog channel 8 and 9 are right now blank. He wants to know, are they going to fill in? And so on. In other words, even though a lot of changes took place starting Friday evening, some of the blank frequencies, I think are valuable chunks of real estate, are not going to stay blank for very long, is my best guess. I think 8, 9, 10, and 12 will eventually be filled up with some kind of digital television in the New York City area, is my guess. But you're in the business, and you can give us the inside information, Eric. KE2EJ, our broadcast engineer, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, nobody's ever going to fill in 2, 3, 4, and 5 in New York, that's for sure. They're going to stay blank. Although those of you that have a digital receiver out there, you now get 7, 11, and 13 on VHF, and it comes booming in. And a lot of people are having trouble picking up 33 and 38 and a couple of others. But I wouldn't hold my breath as far as like those in-between spaces getting filled just yet. Maybe in a couple of years, it's possible. You'll have to see what the economy is doing. But the way the economy is right now, nobody's interested in filing for licenses and putting up stations. Actually, Channel 8, I believe, was supposed to be occupied by NJU. but I don't know what's going on with that. But everybody else is now where they're going to be for the rest of their natural lives, even though Channel 33 are up. When you tune in, it says Channel 2. So everybody's keeping their own original branding. Actually, Channel 21, which was on Channel 22, is now on Channel 21. And 13, which was on 61, is now on 13. And 7, which was on 45, is now on 7. And 33, which is now CBS, used to be PIX, which is on 11. So there you go. And they all have their different flavors of sub-channel. K2IW, K3J.
So you seem to think that 8 is going to stay blank for a while. When you mentioned the fact that people had trouble getting 33 and 38, that's a fancy way of saying UHF Real RF Channel 33 is now what used to be called CBS Channel 2. And Channel 38, UHF Real Frequency Today, is going to be what used to be Channel 9, WWOR. Although you also get WOR as one of the dash channels on Channel 5. Everybody's moving around. The numbers are a little bit crazy. But it'll all eventually settle down as I see it. Now, some of these channels are going to go eventually to higher power, enhanced signals. By the way, are people having trouble getting 33 and 38 because of UHF or because they're presently slightly lower in power they're going to be later? That's question number one. I, for instance, get the channel, what used to be called 55, very well, and it's really on 47. So a number of the UHF channels I get well. But despite the fact that if I use myself as an example, I'm a little bit worried about how some of the people who get over-the-air television are going to be unhappy with losing some of their previous programming. Let me drop. I've got a fringe area television aerial made for UHF, VHF. I guess the total thing is in the vicinity of 10 foot long. I don't know the exact number of elements to it, but a significant number. So I've got a quasi-fringe area, not a deep fringe area, but a quasi-fringe area antenna mounted on the chimney of a ranch house out in the clear as far as the house is concerned, but in a reasonably heavily wooded area. I'm 35 miles east of the Empire State Building, and I'm on land 300 feet above sea level. So by ordinary analog standards, I was a guy who got excellent over-the-air, snow-free television on almost every channel. Right now, there are certain UHF channels with that particular aerial. I'm not getting good enough. Therefore, I've lost some of my previous programming. I've gained a whole lot of new programming. That's the good news. But I've lost some of my previous programming. And in my case, I don't think it's going to be solved until I put a rotator on the antenna, because Channel 2 CBS, as it used to be called, which is really now, I keep forgetting all the numbers, 33. I think I'm not getting 33 either because of its strength or because of multipath. And when I put a rotator on that antenna, I think it'll help. And I'm eventually going to restore the television aerial at the 70-foot level on one of my towers. So, what was the question I had for you, Eric? Oh, yeah. I am speculating. Let me drop.
Inter-symbol distortion.
That's what I was getting at. I am speculating that despite the fact that analog television, if I put in a rotator on my antenna and I skewed the antenna back and forth and changed by 2 dB in the main lobe of getting a signal from Empire State Building, and I watched an analog picture, nothing would happen. However, with digital television, my guess is that rotator can easily give me significant change in the way the multipath occurs, and therefore, in some cases, a particular channel will suddenly come in when I do a small amount of rotating. That's one of the methods of electronically tuning the system to favor the very sharp threshold you get with digital. That's a speculation on my part, and you can either confirm or deny it there. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
K2RW, K2J. The problem is not your antenna. Yes, if you had a rotator, it would help you a little bit. Right now, New York has made a mess of making UHF digital television. You probably get 44, which is fucked, just fine. The problem is getting NBC, which is 28, 33, which is CBS, and a couple of the others, because they still are using their backfill antennas. I mean, they're doing work on Empire now, but I don't expect that that stuff is going to be done until the winter time comes around. And at that point, when they go to the new UHF antennas, it's at the top of the Empire State Building. With four bays that are properly phased with one another, all the problems you're having right now will go away. So, yeah, you can put a rotator on there and actually find a piece of multipath which it works on well, as opposed to the direct signal. K2RIW, KE2J.
Hey, you just said some magic words. So, in other words, channel 33 and 38, which are two of the channels, are FYs that people are having trouble with. 33 becomes CBS old-fashioned channel 2. 38 becomes old-fashioned channel 9, WWOR. I think you're saying there, those particular broadcast centers are using their backup aerial somewhere on the side of the Empire State Building, not on the top of the mast, if I understand correctly. And so, as they change over to the more final antenna on the mast, and there's four bays of it favoring the four directions, life will get a lot nicer. Now, if the four bays are on the mast...
Now, let me straighten you out here.
Go right ahead, Eric.
Currently, the UHF antennas are not on the mast. They're between the, what they call the AA level and the ZZ level, which is the part where, actually, if you were inside there, you'll see that it's all the diamond plate kind of floors. It's the space between the 102nd floor observatory and the 86th floor observatory. The antennas are side mounted on that. That's the actual mooring mast. That was the mooring mast. The tower is what we call the tower now. That's not where the antennas are. Okay, when they finish, that's where the antennas will be.
Okay, I call that the mast. Maybe that's not the right word for it. But the tower on top of the observation deck at the 102 floor, that tower on top, I think you're saying eventually the UHF phased arrays or whatever will be located there. Temporarily, they're on the side of the building, and I see some problems with that because you've got four compass directions to cover, north, south, east, west. You've got four faces of the building. That's the good news.
Put them in the corners.
Okay, even if you put them in the corner, you still got a problem. Whether in the corner or they're on the flat faces, you still got multiple compass directions to cover. Therefore, I can choose a person that's midway between two antennas. He's getting the two antennas simultaneously as an interferometer on the exact same frequency, same polarization. Therefore, there's going to be a whole lot of fingers in space of interferometry pattern, and woe be to you if you happen to live in one of the regions where you're in the notch between two fingers. That's going to mostly go away when they're on the mast because they're so close together for the four directions. But right now, that building, I don't know the exact number, but I guess there's 150 feet to the side of the face of that building, and therefore those antennas are 150 feet apart.
Not that big.
That's 100 feet. That's still a hell of a lot of interferometry at wavelengths that we're talking about that are numbers like 5 and 8 feet.
Okay. Yeah, no, where we're talking about, I think it's only like 30 feet in diameter, the whole building.
Okay. I'll ask you then, Mr. Broadcast Engineer, how many wavelengths is 33 feet?
All right, let's not get funny here, but when they originally put that antenna assembly up, the reason why they are thinking that they needed the backfill antenna is because of where the overlap of the two patterns are.
Yeah, but they're between a rock and a hard place. They're really pushing the laws of physics here. If you've got separate antennas horizontally displaced, favoring the four directions, north, south, east, west, or north, east, southwest, southwest, northwest, you know what I mean. You're favoring at least four directions with four individual antennas that are spaced something like 33 feet apart, multiple wavelengths apart. Therefore, no matter how you do it, there's going to be some people that are midway between two of those antennas, and they're going to be getting the interferometry pattern, which really means the real pattern transmitted into space. It's got a bunch of fingers to it.
No argument.
Okay. So therefore, a person two blocks apart in the east-west direction on the southern face of that building, those two people two blocks apart, one's going to get a tremendous signal, another one's going to get a signal 20 decibels weaker, is my prediction. Over to you, Eric.
I totally agree, Dick. That's why is they made their mistake with the backdoor antenna, is that they didn't put it, they didn't put an equivalent delay line in what feeds the other antennas based on the spacing. Had they done that, you know, the analog world, we can do that all the time. It's easy. You can see it. You can tweak it. You can put a tap line on there and change it, the propagation delay, so that the wavefronts of all the antennas come out at the same time. And you stand to be pretty much in phase with one another as you go around it. And actually, as you move that slotted line up and back, or the trombone rather, you can actually see the ghost move left and right of where you are. But that's in the analog world. That kind of thinking just isn't quite there yet in the digital world.
I agree with you, Eric. That is factor number one for using multiple antennas. Are they all on the same page, time delay-wise? And I'm going to give you that. Once the smoke settles, you and I could, with the right kind of resources, set it up such that each one of the four antennas gets the exact same time delay from the transmitter or the exact same phase of transmission, even with that, because they're 33 feet apart, multiple wavelengths apart. For a resonant at various compass angles from that building.
You're still going to get fingers, and if you want to see what it looks like, I've got a drawing.
Okay, I've drawn that exact drawing multiple times in my business, so you and I are now in agreement. So even when they get them all phased right, there's still going to be fingers in space.
Right, but if you've got fingers and you only have weak signal, you don't have anything interfering with the symbol, you're still going to pick it up.
Amen, as long as you're above threshold in amplitude, and as long as the multipath for that particular path. Now, where the multipath is going to be aggravated is if I happen to live in the notch between two fingers in spatial pattern, and those two fingers happen to be hitting water towers, so that now they're getting very strong multipath signals, at the same time that I'm getting a weak signal in the notch of the finger where I live, I can see a situation where the signal I get from multipath, which has to have an extra amplitude delay because it's bouncing off of something, and the real signal I get by direct,
yeah, I now have an answer for you.
They're going to be shifted in time, but almost equal in amplitude. And I think it's going to be very difficult for a converter box to live with that one. You got an answer for me? Go right ahead, Eric.
Right now, as we speak, on top of Times Square, they are putting together a distributed digital television transmission system, which will have distributed transmitters, all low power, of course, in lots of places, all on the same channel. It actually works.
Yeah, we use 8VSB, which is a little bit more vulnerable to that. The European system, which I keep forgetting the name of their particular system, they use more distributed broadcast as opposed to point source broadcast. And where, if a smart guy is willing to use an antenna that has adaptability to it, like an antenna with some switching circuits in it where it can favor certain directions, it'll usually find a path that is acceptable in the magnitude of multipath and acceptable in the magnitude of signal above threshold, and therefore get a good conversion. So I think you're saying distributed transmission with an intelligent receiving system can be made to work very well, is what I think you're saying. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. Well, the method that's actually happening these days in these new receivers, take it into consideration, is there's a timing signal. Based upon which timing signal is stronger, the timing signal is set such that the symbols of the various transmitters interweave one another. So therefore, even though that you may have a propagation delay between the incoming source and, say, the next closest source, the symbol is sort of like a TDMA, if you want to think about it, whereas it's slotted in time. The receivers understand the training signal, which is really the timing signal, as to when to decode.
Yeah, I have the impression the most important portion of the new digital transmission is the synchronization of that reference signal, call it the timing. And I guess almost all of the demodulation sort of breaks down if the timing is not received as a fairly clean signal and properly generated locally within the demodulator. That's my guess as to what's going on. And 8VSB has got certain advantages, and that's one of its Achilles heels, so to speak. I keep forgetting, what is the name of the system used in Europe, and does it also...
COFDM. It's actually DVBT.
DVDT and COFDM, Frequency Division Multiplex, Coherent. What does the COFDM stand for, Eric?
The DVB stands for Digital Video Broadcast, and the DAS T means terrestrial. There's also DVBS, which is satellite. There's DVB T1 and T2, which are two different other forms of terrestrial. There is COFDM, which is coherent orthogonal frequency division multiplex, orthogonal, sorry. And the Chinese have a new system of their own, and the Japanese have a completely different system.
Wow. Would you, as a engineer, in theory, be able to design a universal television set that you go to program a... I'm not talking about a software-defined TV receiver. Is a software-defined TV receiver possible such that I go to program A when I'm in the States, and I go to program B when I'm in Europe, and I go to program C when I'm in Japan? Is that possible?
Well, currently, the multi-standard sets that are available, of course, work RF-wise. So, you know, you bring them to the United States, it'll understand NTSC. You bring it down to South America, it understands PAL-M. You bring it to Europe, it understands the various different flavors of RF transmission of PAL, because most people don't realize it's one country may transmit positive video, and the next country will transmit negative video with an inverted sound carrier. Remember, the boundaries are small there, and the concept at one point in time was to keep you from watching some other country's stuff. So, the carriers were inverted, the actual polarity of the video was inverted. A multi-standard digital receiver, actually, I know of at this point, a couple of USB sticks and the receivers themselves, the decoders, that will do COFDM, DVBT, and will do 8VSB. And some of them will do QPSK, but it won't handle the other stuff that's out there, like T1, T2, with the Chinese system and the Japanese system.
Man alive, do we have alphabet soup? Wow. I used to think it was bad with just the terms that the RF people use. Impedance, resistance, reactance, admittance, conductance, susceptance, permittivity, permeability. There's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 8 terms just to describe RF characteristics of a cable or network or substance. And now when it comes to methods of transmitting 2009 television. Wow, what alphabet soup we got. How many people do you think on planet Earth really understand the multiple standards, Eric? And that's question number one, but that's a frivolous question. My real question to you, Eric, is you've been in the heart of all of this jazz. You've been seeing it happening. You've made a couple of predictions about a little bit of grief that's going to happen starting Friday evening when we kill analog television for the rest of the history of mankind in the United States. It's going to be digital from now on. Have there been very many calls to the centers? Was it as bad as everyone predicted? Are the customers unhappy? Or, for the most part, do you think the system is working mainly because 90% of the people are on some kind of cable and therefore there was no real switchover for them? So how bad was the transition from your point of view, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Well, I know that people have been calling. The number of people have been calling. The old ladies can't even figure out how to push the buttons on their little tuners to rescan. Wait till Monday, because, you know, most people don't consider businesses to be open on the weekend, but people are having their issues. I just don't know what the volume is. I know that there was heavy volume on Friday evening, and they were getting quite a few calls. Actually, if you give me a minute, I can go to a website and see what nationally is happening, because the FCC actually puts this data out every day, so
there's lots of folks having trouble, and there are lots of folks that are just perfectly happy and also seeing new content. T2RWK2J.
Yeah, boy, am I seeing a lot of new content, and I suddenly realize about a dumb mistake that I made for the last year. I'll tell you about that on the next transmission. Are we allowed to know the address of the website that tells you the statistics of this is one question I've got. Second of all, I think an awful lot of people still watch television on weekends, so I'm not convinced that Monday morning is going to be that much worse than the weekend. Yes, there's a hell of a lot more content now, a hell of a lot more individual programs that people are getting. That's part of the advantage of digital television. Cleaner picture, high definition, 16:9, a lot more programming, lower power of the transmitters, saving frequencies that are being reused by other emergency services. There's a whole lot of advantages. And of course, there's going to be growing pains. When it comes to the degree of difficulty of learning the new hardware, I'm seeing it in my house. There are individuals in my house. I think I've got a high technology house. At least I try to speak the language from time to time. But right now, the people in my house have a fair amount of trouble understanding which buttons to push between the converter and the old-fashioned analog set that's being fed video and audio into one of its auxiliary ports, if you know what I mean. It's just a display device. I don't have a real high-def television yet. Although I got a CRT there, but it's transmitting 525 lines to the picture. This is a learning curve.
You want to hear this?
Yeah, there's a learning curve, and I know that KE2EJ, K2KEY, Bell predicted that certain people are not going to be able to get television for some time to come. Go ahead, then, tell us the website, Eric.
Let me read this to you. The website's easy. It's FCC.gov. Here we go. Full power TV broadcast at Goal Digital. This was released the 13th, which is yesterday. Washington, D.C., the nation's historic switch to digital television by 971 full-power stations Friday prompted hundreds of thousands of consumers to call for assistance because, now this is politics, because no widespread disruption of free over-the-air broadcasting. A record 317,450 consumers called the FCC's toll-free helpline for a total of almost 700,000 from June 8th to June 12th. Of the calls handled by the live FCC helpline, nearly 30% concerned the operation of digital converter boxes. Most of the calls were resolved when the consumers were instructed to rescan their converter boxes in order to receive the digital channels that had moved to new frequencies. And it goes on and on and on. You can read it, but that kind of answers your question. But this is a national line. It's not individually by station, so.
I got a comment, K2KEY.
Very fine. Go ahead, Bill, with your comment.
Okay. I got the box, the Zenith 901 box that Eric suggested some time ago. And as of 12:30 Friday, I rescanned it. I put it in and rescanned it. Now, I had perfect analog reception before. My antenna basically is just an antenna that's been in the attic, hanging up in the rafters from the time we moved in here. Just a regular TV antenna, and gave perfect reception on analog. So I said, well, let's see what happens to it digitally with the converter box. And it works that I'm getting everything, at least 37 channels that the box indicates that I'm receiving. And I'm going through all the channels I never even heard of before. I'm seeing all of a sudden. And I got involved with one situation helping somebody out with this problem of hooking up the converter box and getting it to work. And let me tell you something, I created a nightmare. In fact, 5 minutes ago, so help me God, I had a call on the phone that I didn't pick up again from this person because they can't seem to get it. They can't. It's an older person that just can't get it to work right. And I shied away from a whole bunch of other sick because it is, in this area here, there's some real chaos over.
Yep, that's sort of predictable, Eric. I mean, Mel, when you say 37 channels, I think we ought to set a standard of not counting the sub-channels. In other words, Channel 4, what you see now with digital television, will be 4-1, 4-2, 4-4. I call that one single channel 4 with four sub-channels to it. If we count the sub-channels, it's going to be very difficult to keep track of what's going on because one particular UHF channel, I think it was like 27, has 12 sub-channels. Some of them are only audio, but we've got to count.
FMU.
Yeah, that's, I think it's the one. WFMU. That sounds right. And 12 dash numbers. So I think we got to count just the main number before the dash. And so in that particular case, if you count them that way, Mel, I think you're going to have a slightly smaller number, but that way we can all compare notes a little bit more rationally. Here's the question I got for you, Eric, and that is, I've been scared to death to do a rescan. The reason for that is I had the fear that all the valuable information I've loaded in, some of it would get lost in the rescan. Some people are telling me when they rescan, it adds new, it ECNs, as they say, engineering change notice, but doesn't erase any of the old until you manually go in there and erase them. I was afraid of erasing the old because as I flip between my various antennas eventually, and I have a new antenna on the high section on the tower with a rotator on it, I'll have one set of channels that'll work when I'm aimed to the north and I'm looking at Connecticut, and I'll have another set of channels that'll work when I'm aimed to the west. So I want to add channels. I don't want to erase any of the old ones, even if they've gone dead. I'm willing to live with that. So when I do a rescan, do most of the brand names, to your knowledge, Eric, add without subtracting, or do they just wipe out everything and start fresh, which would bother me a little bit for my particular kind of operation? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
You get back to me, Dick, again.
Will do. Go ahead, Eric.
Depends on whose box you have. If you have an older box, they usually add line adds, which is nice. The new ones, erase and start again. Whatever it sees, that's what it gets. The newer boxes don't let you dial directly. You got to scan first, then you can dial. These manufacturers, their own stupid way of doing it, there's a publication that specifies what the receiver has to do and what the protocol is. How you implement it is entirely up to you. There's no specifications for that. So, really, if the receiver manufacturers were smart, because of all the problems with the old ladies in the world and old men that can't figure out how to go a menu level, they could make one big round dial that you go click, 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 and it takes care of everything for you. K2RW, K2J.
Right. Not only do we not have that great big dial, the person who said break, be careful. Those words are vital to be used only for an emergency. Go ahead, give me your call letter, sir.
K2GJE, just want to give you a small bit of information. Over.
Okay, GJE, start off with your name and give us your small bit of information.
Handle is Ed. I have a Zenith. It has easy add. That will not remove channels. If you use rescan, you will lose channels. Over.
Good information, Ed. Awful glad you gave that to us. So the Zenith converter has the easy add function. My particular Radio Shack converter has the so-called edit function, and I can add channels. I can dial in a number RF-wise. If I hit the number 2, it goes to what is popularly known as 32, which really is UHF channel 33. I can also, if I want to, hit decimal point 33, and it goes to real RF-33. And by that kind of a scan process, manually scanning, I can find things. And some of the things I find intermittently are there and intermittently are not there, depending on changes in propagation and the way my particular antenna works, which doesn't yet have a rotator. So there's various things we've got to get used to. Mel, when it comes to older people, and even young people by my standards in my house are having trouble. The way you press the buttons on the remote control and that great big knob that we should have ain't there. In fact, some of these converters have nothing on the front panel. If that remote control goes dead, you got nothing. You got no way of controlling the darn thing. All you can do is plug it and unplug it, so to speak. But for people to learn how to hit the right buttons at the right time, to do a scan, to find out what is the name of the programming material, how long it's going to last, there's a lot of learning curve there. And in some cases, if you hit the wrong combination, all of a sudden the machine